you know what I'm saying, that we've lost in the struggle. You know what I'm saying? So this is Ana Tiju with Calaveritas. It's more of a ballad type joint than we're used to, but it's an amazing song, and you feel it, you know what I'm saying? That's how we're going to finish the show. Make sure to tune in next Wednesday and every Wednesday, 10 p.m. to midnight, Rebel Diaz Radio. Much love, y'all.
Listen to my heart speak. Bathe in the warmth of the morning sun. I'll wait for you.
I'll wait for you.
Bathe in the warmth of the morning sun.
My. Listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine here with you this morning, and we're going to have a conversation for those of you who'd like to engage. I've been having some very interesting experiences, revelations, transformation. I have been on quite a journey, I guess, a spiritual journey that I have come to realize involved my whole life since the day I was born, I believe. But I've really just come to terms with it in maybe my 30s, and now I'm really feeling a sense of ease hitting my stride, I would say. So I wanted to share with you a little piece I wrote for a blog, and invite you to join me in conversation. Maybe you want to share a little bit of your journey and tell us how what might have seemed to have been a challenge turned out to be just the thing that was needed to prompt you to move in the direction that was beneficial, or perhaps that allowed for some growth in your life. So this piece is called Fade to Gray. What does it mean in tangible terms to be a way shower? That's the subtitle. All of my life, I have lived in the margins, not quite fitting in with societal trends and values. For decades, I sat on the sidelines, watching people marry, have children, climb the social and economic ladders of life, as they relaxed with their ball games, picnics, and kitchen table gossip. But I was never able to fit in, so I meandered about in a state of moody discontent, thinking that there was something fundamentally wrong with my way of experiencing life. At pivotal points of intersection, I found friends and allies on the path of dysfunction, and began to take pride in being an outsider, even a revolutionary, railing and protesting the inequities of our times, women's rights, anti-war, and social justice became my rallying call. This life became the source of great personal pride and kinship with those who resonated to these movements. But in the end, these relationships proved to be paper thin, based on projection and affirmation of selfhood. There was little below the surface to sustain and nourish my soul. I sank into the dark night of misery once again, feeling lost in a competitive world. I dropped out and settled for low-intensity employment, shallow friendships, and took to soft drugs and booze to soften the sharp edges of my internal confusion. Never could I muster the courage to jump into the game that I witnessed all around me. This behavior proving to be less than satisfying, I found myself sinking into spiritual considerations and became a solitary creature once more. I found my passion in seeking, looking into the lost books and myriad cultural teachings, taking insights from sages and purported masters of ancient mysteries and spiritual truths. I learned a lot, but finally realized that what I gained was a lot of information, which in itself did not equal wisdom or any level of mastery within my own life. But I had come to realize that self-mastery was what I truly desired and needed. So I let go of seeking and began to listen to the voices of discontent that rose from unknown places inside my being, and I began to surrender to the unraveling path inspired by those voices. To my salvation, the unraveling became the source point for making peace with myself, allowing me to finally let go of worldly things. As I grow deeper into my true compass, I watch it all that I knew to be, fade away into pale gray. The insights, feelings, and experiences I've gathered are still here as a resource to draw upon, but I no longer live in them. I live in the world of now and weave a fresh existence that comes from being in harmony with my soul's deepest desires. So this was just a little piece I wrote for a blog, and it is an extreme condensation of the journey, my path as I have traveled this way and that. But I find as I have gotten older that I've become more centered, more balanced, more in a state of peace. I feel in harmony with myself, if not the world. And so I'm rather enjoying being alive in a way that I don't think I have prior to this particular period in my life. So it's rather interesting that we sort of wander through our lives and things look good and things look bad, and we get involved and we engage in this or that activity. We work, we play, all the things that we do. But there seems to be within the context of our lives an unfolding that is taking us on a much deeper journey. And that folding, depending on how you look at it, is really motivated from that deeper part of ourselves. So very often we find ourselves with a life challenge. That life challenge is there with a purpose, because as we move through it, resolve it, or move beyond, uplift ourselves beyond the life challenges, we end up being much stronger, more solid in our capacity and confidence to move through the world. So I find that life has gotten better as I have gone through the years. I was going to say aged, but let's not go there, because I don't really think in terms of aging. It's ripening. It's deepening. It's becoming more wise, becoming an elder. And I think that we are as young as we choose to be. Let me play another piece of music for you, and we'll be back. You can call in if you like, 718-780-8888. This is Emer Kenny, Isfada. We have a caller. Hello. Welcome. Yeah. What is your name?
Good evening. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I am one of your apostles.
Well, that's sweet. And tell us your name.
My name is Castell Hamilton.
Welcome.
Yes, I studied Eastern philosophy all my life, and I studied all the branches of yoga and other great books that coming from that angle.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that your topic heart of mine, it's a very profound topic. And I listened to your comment tonight, and we are all seeker of the great flame. But we got to know that self, O man. And Atima, a great professor, wrote the Telegrammation, which I have, and you had to know yourself. You cannot know yourself from without to get it from within. And once you find yourself and you dedicate yourself to happiness and love, which is a very, very tough thing to do. It is not an easy path. It takes dedication and submission to that which is within you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be open. And that is what is happening. And very few of us really dedicate ourselves to that path. The sun always rises, and at the appointed time, it never sets. It goes down and shines somewhere else. So we have to shine within ourselves, know our path, travel that path, because the Savior is always with you. God had made man perfect. The only thing that was missing from man, it was breath. And when he breathed into man's soul, not into his nostril, into his soul, man became a living being. And from that being requires wisdom and knowledge. And all the
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, yeah.
And all the aspect that man requires is within him. His universe is within him. Every planet is within him. Every aspect of life is within man, what he wants. The seven principles that man has is within him.
Let me ask you something, if I may.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you tell us, from your experience, some anecdote of how you've experienced this wisdom that you're sharing?
Yes. To experience wisdom, which is out of the mount of the absolute, you got to have that inner peace within.
Yes, but what I'm asking you is to personalize it a little bit. And tell a little something about yourself and how you've experienced it.
Yes. When I was born, and my father told me that as solo biologist, a guy that reads stars, passed by and told him that his wife was going to have a little prophet. And he says my mother was afraid of the gentleman. And from I was born and until now, that's what I am. When I was 7 years old, I operated on a chicken, cut the craw, an empty cassava out of the stomach, and sew up the chicken, and the chicken lived. I always see the prophet Joel with me, and I always visited the heavens and saw the angels, and I talked with them, and saw Jesus many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
And I have accomplished great things. I teach a lot of people how to live this life, because happiness is from within you. And I found myself to be happy in every aspect of life. I traveled throughout Europe, and I educated in England as an electrical engineer and also as a herbologist.
Hmm.
And I'm a spiritualist. And I studied deeply and come to myself that the only thing that can help any human soul is himself. And I've proven that.
Excellent.
Because I have lost thousands of dollars, was cheated. And my mother cried. I said to her, Mama, don't cry, because he will repay it. And I went to Europe when I was 14 years old with my aunt, and I finished schooling there, and I saw the man. One evening, I was into a pub, and I saw this guy walked in. He was scruffy. He was black. The suit that the guy wear, if you paste him against the wall, he would never move from that wall. And I turned around and looked at him. I said, Mr. Parrish, I said, this is Castle Hamilton. And he ran out of the public. Out of the pub. He ran. But that was his payday. So whatsoever you do comes back to you. That is the law. You can't hide from it. So what you're doing, soul of mine, it really one of the most touching program in WBI. It touches the soul.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Not the heart, the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And when something touched the soul, it touched the entire you. Because it sends you to look within yourself to find out who you are. Because a lot of people don't know who they are. They look in the mirror, and they look at that illusion that they're looking at and think that is themselves. No, it's that illusion. You got to go within you. And when you go within you and be at peace with yourself, then you can find your real self. And when you find your real self, you take charge of it. Never allow your physical being to control your spiritual being. The mnemonic way was I am. The I is the spirit, and the am is the body. So the spirit must control the body. But in the physical world, in this capitalistic element of society, is the other way around.
And well, that's very, very true, and it's unfortunate. But now is the time that I think people are, more people, I believe, are really looking for that inner guidance at this time, because there's nothing in the outer world. People are seeing it crumble, and I think now is the time for everyone to be taking that look inward and really feeling and experiencing themselves for whom they truly are. I really appreciate your call. I'm going to take a few more calls. Thank you so much. Did you want to say something else?
Yes. When I look at what is happening today in this present dispensation that we're in at the moment, and look at what happened down in Florida, what happened in Connecticut, there was 26 children in Florida. Now there is 52, and in Oklahoma there is something is wrong. And when I go back into history and research history, I found out that this is going on, this group of people, Caucasian tribe. They're not a nation. They are a tribe of people. And they came after we were here. And they are the Zephilim that came, and they came 50,000 years after, and here they are. They came with violence, they live with violence, and they're perpetrating violence upon the land. And they'll go out with violence, because right now, the seed has been sown. There comes Sodom and Gomorrah that passed and is back here in existence today. And you stand aside and watch, and you'll see that the end is in sight. This is the last call.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome. Have a blessed day.
And
I'm always listening to your program. At some time, I may join your program.
All right, thank you.
God bless.
Bye-bye. Well, that was a most interesting call. If you'd like to join us, the number is 718-780-8888, 718-780-8888. I think that there is really a problem with the world at this moment. I personally wouldn't characterize it as belonging to one group of people. I think that there are, unfortunately, people in every race who are going down this path of destruction. I do consider that you mentioned the Nephilim, you know, those who came from heaven and also known as the Anunnaki. I believe that there really was a tampering with humanity, and certain groups of people were perhaps manipulated, perhaps used, perhaps inbred with, in order to create dominant class and dominant structures that went on to really not just control the world, but also destroy the indigenous populations of the planet. Now, I consider indigenous peoples to have been everywhere on the planet. If you look into history, you'll see that a lot of the destruction occurred in lands where we might not think of as indigenous people, but in northern lands are also indigenous people, as just as in southern lands are indigenous people. And there has been this long, maybe, I don't know, 300,000 year history, 400,000, maybe even probably more, 10,000, maybe 10,000 is a closer estimation, of destruction to the indigenous population of the earth, destruction to the earth itself, and some kind of insane exploitation that leaves nothing but destruction in its wake. And I also believe that we're living in those times of change. It was predicted by many ancient peoples that this would be the time of perhaps reckoning, or this would be the time of transformation. Some people think of it as a time of ascension. But a lot of it has to do with whether or not we are in touch with our essence, in touch with our divine self. And I certainly do not categorize people, either Caucasian, Black, Indian, Asian, whatever the people are, I believe, and I feel quite convinced that it's about what the individual is choosing and how, on an individual level, we engage with ourselves, with each other, and with our own divinity. So I would have to say that I don't agree that it is singularly one group of people against the other. But I do believe that it is a force that comes through and has been cultivated through a group of elites who are still running and controlling the world. I think the real challenge we face is that it's not the only illusion we see is not in looking in the mirror, but also in having the false perception that we are somehow exempt or privileged from taking responsibility and being in a position to face whatever the consequences of our choices. And I believe that that's a universal thing. So let's play another piece of music. And for those of you who would like to join in with your phone calls, you may. The number is 718-780-8888. And we're going to listen to Season of Souls by Tolku and Sandy Tonello. You're listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine Davis. I wanted to share with you an interesting article that was really on the solstice, the change of the seasons. And I really have had some very interesting couple of days. I started with a morning meditation on, let's see, on the 20th, which was really the day of the solstice. And I also went to a gong bath at Integral Yoga, which is a very beautiful, was a very beautiful experience in the evening. And I have since been experiencing several openings, mystical experiences, connections, very deep connections to my, I don't know, soul self, higher self. But we really are living in a time of awakening. And no one is bound by their past. Everyone has an opportunity to engage in the fulfillment of their dreams, their destiny. We have an opportunity to contribute to the uplifting of the world, of each other. And I feel that while it is true there are beings on the earth who are causing harm, who have caused harm, I believe that to some degree this harm is coming through an energy which has pervaded the earth for a very long time, several hundred years at the very least. I have a tendency to slip into hundreds of thousands, but I realize that our known recorded history is not as long as the actual history of our civilization and of the planet. It's quite much longer than our history books will tell us. So I have a tendency to refer to that truth rather than stick to the limited education that's given through our schools and archaeological interpretation of the history of the planet. But at any rate, we just had, and we're still in the energy of this celestial event, Earth event, the full moon solstice, which occurred on the 20th of June, which was Monday. And this is a piece that comes from a website called thepowerpath.com. And this is a shamanic site, but they also do archaeological readings. So I wanted to share it with you because it's significant to be mindful of the energies in which we live. It's like a fish living in water. We as human beings live in oxygen, but we also live in fields of energy. And those fields are connected and impacted by what's happening seasonally, by what's happening in the solar system. We also impact each other. But this is particularly on the full moon and solstice, which occurred on Monday the 20th. Once every 30 plus years, the summer solstice in the northern hemisphere, or winter solstice, which is the southern hemisphere, and full moon fall on the same day. This is a rare and powerful event and should be well honored. The full moon is at 5:02 a.m. Mountain Daylight Time, and the brightest of the night, and brightest the night of the 19th. So all of this has passed. The solstice is at 4:34 p.m. So this was Monday. But I'm reading it because we're still living in these energies. They're still having an impact on our experience, on our lives, on the milieu of the world. Take advantage of this powerful energy and celebrate something in your life that you have accomplished. It could be a completion, a decision, a project, a commitment, a new beginning, or the achievement of some goal. This is also a social time for gatherings, community events, and cooperative participation. Make sure that during this time you stay focused on the positive, on the doors that are opening, and on the potential, instead of dwelling on any fear, resistance, judgment, or negativity. What you put your energy and focus on will grow in this fertile time, so make sure it is what you want. Allow yourself to be supported by your community and your friends, and be willing to receive all the positive energy that is available to you at this time. The solstice is always a good time to honor the sun and the life-giving energy it makes available to us on this planet. The solstice, any ceremony honoring the sun or the spirit of fire is appropriate. Release something you are leaving behind. Welcome something that is new, fertile, and rich with possibilities. So that's what this time is for. And it's an opportunity to contemplate what you would like to leave behind and what you would like to become blossom in your life. And it's even more important because of the age in which we live, because there is a transformation taking place at this time. So it goes on to talk a little bit more about this, but I just feel like it's something to really pay attention to and to look at within your own life. And I would say that it's very important to cultivate within ourselves that sense of inner peace and inner freedom and that real desire to come into the fullness of who we are. I'm going to play just another piece of music. And then we'll be back. If you would like to join the conversation, you may. The number is 718-780-8888. And I'm going to play After Dreaming by Wasis Diop.
Samunga.
Lo siento. Kage mita.
listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine, and we have a guest caller. Hello, welcome.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
Actually, a little somber, but sometimes there's beauty in being somber, so.
Well, that is true.
Yeah.
It tends to take you into the deepest part of our of self, you know.
Doesn't it now? And it's also a break from the sometimes the sameness. And sometimes you, I look at it this way, when you feel like you're in a little bit of a pit or a little bit like you're falling back, sometimes you can catapult from that. Whereas if you get stuck in the sameness, sometimes it's harder to jar yourself from that kind of situation. So I, you know.
Yeah, that's very true.
I'm not afraid of the darkness if people are okay with that expression. You know, we don't want to. Whatever. I don't necessarily want to ascribe emotional value to light or dark, but you know, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, I know. It's hard. There are many, you know, mind fields in language.
Right.
But I get what you're talking about.
Yeah. You know. So, okay. I just want to say, I think there's something will have their individual sense of pain apart. Because sometimes there's, especially peoples who are of a group or considered to be of groups that are oppressed or treated badly, and I'm not negating that. That is so true in so many ways. Sometimes there's a problem where people say, people have self-loathing and self-hate, but they don't allow them to say the taboo thing of saying, I have self-loathing and self-hate belonging to the group that I'm ascribed to or born into. And I'm thinking that why not allow that individual to state that and let that be its point of departure, instead of having people play to a political construct as being their sense of identity, because I don't think they have to be mutually exclusive. I think that people are afraid of letting people say, you know, I'm sort of not pleased that I was born to this oppressed group, because that's not in sync with the politics or what that group wants to put forth. My problem with that is you're creating a situation where you don't let the person express their pain, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. And there may be people who will express that and then will continue there, but I think there are other people that will break through and say, okay, I can feel this pain and understand this self-loathing comes from a situation that has been imposed over many years and hundreds of thousands of millennia. And I don't of necessity have to negate my own personal pain in order to fit into some political construct to make others feel comfortable, and that there are many ways of being. And I just, one of the problems I have, and you know, I'm a BEI person, I'm a progressive and leftist and all that stuff, but I just have a problem with people saying, well, you have to act in accordance with an ideology that is in concordance with a political system, because I think that distorts people's personal trauma and personal injury. And I say, let those people process that and let it go where it may. And I think most of the times, if you let that process, those people will come to a place where they'll realize that, you know, I can have a problem with being born into a group for whatever reason, and at the same time understand that it's all part of a larger package, and let me step forward one step at a time and move through this, instead of like having my life conform to some preconceived progressive, well-intentioned political construct.
I understand what you're saying, and I think I agree with you. I think. What I would like to ask you is, are you one who has any issue with the group that you were born in?
Oh, yeah.
So
very much.
So,
because the group I was born into is almost like seen as political football, and many people take it many different places, and I find myself constantly having to deconstruct to reconstruct, and that becomes very exhausting. So what I can't just be.
Okay, I get that. I can get that. Can you personalize it a little bit more? Make me understand it a little better, what you're saying?
What exactly would you want me to, where would you want me to take it?
So I understand, you know, what you're saying, because you're speaking in terms of concepts that make sense to me. But I was wondering if you could explain it from the perspective of experience.
Okay, you brought me out into the light here. I can't, or the darkness. What does it matter? Mm-hmm. Let's not ascribe a moral virtue to one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Since it is dark right now, so we're in the darkness, damn it. Let's embrace the darkness and the full moon and all that wonderful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was born into a family, a Cuban family that was politically divided, and my father would have been very much in sync with BAI. My mother would have been completely the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my problem is, you know, I consider myself a left-of-center progressive person, but I don't necessarily think that that means that I have to be in consensus with everything around what Cuba stands for and what Cuba is.
Mm-hmm.
Nor do I want to say that Cuba is the worst place in the world. There's a lot of good things, and there's a lot of stuff that, you know, our country could learn from.
Yeah.
And you see, so it's like there's the crux of the matter. I can't be without, when people say, well, they want to put me in a box and I don't fit in one end or the other, and I'm ideologically, politically, I'm much more progressive and left. But then when I say that, people will automatically presume, well, you know, you must be hook, line, and sinker with everything that's going down with whatever Castro or whatever Cuba today stands for. And I'm saying, no, not of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so, so much of what Cuba is political football. People will superimpose whatever they want instead of looking at the humanity or whatever people have to deal with. Because at the end of the day, you know, I from my personal experience, my mother has a home health care worker whose kid has just got here yesterday from Cuba, and she had to go through hell and high water to get this kid out of Cuba to come over here. Now, it was something like a year and a half. Now, if you're a free country, why wouldn't your people from your country be able to leave when they want to,
mm-hmm.
and go where they want to? So I'm not dogging on it across the board, but I just have a problem with the simplistic notions of seeing something as the perfect, you know, socialist Disneyland in the Caribbean on one end, and the other end, the demonization, which makes no sense either.
Yeah.
So
well,
my discomfort is I know when people look at me and say, you know, your parents are Cuban. I like your food and I like your music, and that's sort of like being relegated to the arts and crafts section of historical relevance. You know,
I so get it.
You know,
I know what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying, and
yeah.
I experience this all the time being at WBAI, because BAI does have a tendency to be very leftist, Marxist, communist, and to the point, from my perspective, of dogma. And
right.
And because I follow a path of spirituality, which is viewed as being foolish, religious, you know, so there's a great divide
That's another problem, and I understand that, because I very much am in tune with the spiritual stuff that you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was just watching Neil deGrasse Tyson on The Late Show with
uh-huh.
Stephen Colbert, and Neil deGrasse Tyson seems so, like, you know, he wants to distance himself from anything that could be remotely ascribed to looking, you know, metaphysical, you know, and that I look at him and I, you know, he may have that general, you know, left brain scientific conviction, or who knows for what reason, but I find him kind of frustrating, because everything for him is about numbers and, you know, universal spatiality, and that I'm very much into spiritual.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people at BAI just see politics as a very stark, you know, thing that's devoid of any kind of real spiritual thing. And they look at us and we're like woo-woo people. So I very much am in sync with you, and I followed you for many years, so I know I know about your travails at BAI. Yeah. I sympathize, and I'm very much sympathetic to that cause, because I think maybe that the people, the left-wing people on the left coast, California, they might be a little bit more in sync with the metaphysics, but for whatever reason, New York lefties are very much into the secular materialist way. I don't want to dog on that, but that seems to be a very prevailing way of looking at the world, and I just think that that's a very limited way, and that's only one way.
It is only one way. It doesn't have to be limited, however, because I think part of the humanizing factor on the left is, you know, humanism, secular humanism, in which people are looking at how they conduct themselves, nonviolent communication, you know, being caring for other people. So I think it's entirely, I don't think the spiritual mindset is absolutely necessary when people are functioning from a perspective of, you know, deep honoring of each other as human beings.
Sure.
I think where we get into trouble and where I have seen a lot of difficulty is when the construct, like you said, the political construct becomes so narrow and rigid that we collapse upon each other and end up attacking each other over minute details of difference and about feeling like, you know, like the absolute authority. And so people set themselves up as an absolute authority about something.
Oh, so with you. Any people that set themselves up for, like, we are the be-all, end-all, for me, that's always a problem. And I think that, you know, I'm not a mainstream religious person, but I know there's plenty of mainstream religious people there who are progressive and views, or even if not progressive, are very humane and good people.
Mm-hmm.
And those people, neither on BAI Pacifica nor on the mainstream media, they don't get much of an airing. They really don't get much of a voice. If you listen, you would think that we live in a country that the only people who are Christians are the radical right, and the only people that get much of a voice are the people who are seen out there who will call themselves Christian, who are, if not necessarily radical right, are right of center. And we sort of dismiss or even think about the many people who, again, are Christians, or call themselves, like, you know, church-going Christians, and are humane people, may or may not be that politically involved, but are good people. And among them, there are also people who have progressive notions, and to put it in the vernacular, know what's going down.
And this is true, I would say, of every religion. It's true of every religion, the Islamic faith,
exactly,
the Hebrew faith. There are many, many people who have strong belief in either religion or God or spirituality,
but are very much
for progressive politics about, you know, theology of liberation was really big during the travails in Nicaragua and Central America when, you know, and death squads were killing priests because they were preaching liberation theology. So I think that it's a much deeper conversation that needs to be had. And fundamentally, whether a person is a communist or a Christian or an atheist, whatever it is, it's to look at each other from the perspective of deep honor, deep respect,
humanity,
loving humanity. And, you know, for me, from the spiritual perspective, to me, is as legitimate as any science. We're looking at a part of existence that we've been educated out of recognizing, but is very real and tangible, and we can communicate. We have a capacity to communicate on such a deep level that it's a shame that there's this prejudice and dogma against it. And to me, that's the real oppression. You know, we had a caller earlier who was ascribing problems to a particular race. I don't buy into that, but I think that the real problem is that there was an introduction into humanity to disengage from the direct experience of spirituality, the direct experience of divinity, and the, you know, the systems were put in place to keep people in fear, you know, because I, even growing up, I always wondered about, why do people ask if I'm God-fearing? Why would anyone need to fear?
Why would you be God-fearing?
Yeah, yeah, what does that mean?
What a loaded phrase, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that's where the problem is that we've been pushed as a humanity into one side of the brain and taught to ignore the full capacity of who we are as human beings. So to me, spirituality is very real.
Oh, for sure. And we've been bereft of the cosmic feminine, you know, yeah. in religion and you know, I consider myself, I guess, again, I sort of wore labels, but I guess paganism is something that really is interesting to me, because I think mm-hmm. the worshipping of the rock and the sun and all that stuff predated religion anyway. And it's funny how people try and dismiss Christianity or whatever that is and say that, well, you know, the Christmas tree is a pagan symbol or whatever. So we'll say, well, why is that necessity a diss? Because everything came from something on some level.
Well, yeah.
So just, right? So why? Because it came out of a pagan origin, why does that necessity invalidate whatever Christianity took and acculturated and made a Christmas tree? You know, it's kind of ironic that people look at that and say,
it's,
well,
even you're so right, it's even more ironic because everything that is Christian came from something else.
Right And Roman mythology and yeah. all this other stuff, right?
So much rolled into it. It's not an original.
Right, indeed, right. And the flood is a religious archetype that was predated Christianity, you know, and somehow
yeah.
people are freaked out if you go there, you know. Let me just say one more thing, if I may, Kathy.
Okay, hold on a second. I have another call coming in. Keep
sure.
talking. I just don't want to lose the call.
Sure.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you were calling in, you're now on hold. All right, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to say, you know, again, I have respect for all views that seek towards making the world better, you know, because I don't mm-hmm. want to say I have respect for all views, because that opens license to any and everybody who's
yeah.
looking to make mayhem. But, you know, the people who, and not to dog another show, but when you use a tagline on the show, it's like equal time for free thought, the atheist or humanist show, it sort of by implication says that anyone who is spiritual is not a free thinker. So that I have a problem with framing the show. And again, I have no problem with being an atheist or agnostic. That's fine. I know many beautiful atheists and agnostics. But when you set up your program saying sort of by default, you're saying equal time for free thought, and it's implicit that you're talking about atheism and agnosticism, then you're saying that those who are believe in some sort of metaphysics don't have an equal sitting at the table, and that's a problem, because then you're setting yourself up as better than. So,
well, I understand what you're saying, but truthfully, I know those guys, and they're pretty open-hearted.
Yeah, they're cool guys.
But I think that free thinking is a catchphrase that historically came about. I don't know that they were choosing that. I think they chose that label because it identifies them in their community.
Right.
But I always look at that juxtaposed to established religion. You know, it's like,
right.
You know, and so I try to give it a little bit of a break in the sense that I understand what that is juxtaposed to. It's juxtaposed to,
right.
you know, really extreme religious behaviors that constrict a person's ability to be free thinking. So it doesn't necessarily attach itself to me.
No, I understand that, but I'm not sure if they would or would not agree with that, but I don't want to fuss budget over semantics, because that can make us all a little nuts. But yeah. I thank you so much, Kathy, yeah. for engaging me, and you have a wonderful, blessed night.
You too. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
All right, that was a lovely call. Thank you very much. And the number here is 718-780-8888. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
In regards to that word fearing God, mm-hmm. when I was little, when I would go to church, I would ask, why should I fear God if he's all that love? And I think they'd say, well, you're just supposed to. And then not until I was like 18, I asked my aunt, and she said that word fear means to honor God, that's what it meant back when it was written. And I thought, oh, good. Now, it was such a relief where I finally got the answer to the question. So what I want to bring to the table is that I feel like with thinking, when we think too much, and, you know, it's questions and thoughts, that it's so nice just to know that the answer will come, that we don't have to know everything mm-hmm. at the moment we're wondering, but that we can just, like, be open for things to come to us and not have to think so much. Because thinking is takes us out of the present, really. It's like thinking just could take us over.
You make a very good point. I completely agree with that. Thinking, generally speaking, is not knowing at all. And yeah. if you can, and thinking has a tendency to program us. You know, you can have a thought will repeat. That thought gives forth a certain energy. You can change how you feel. You could, you know, think something bad or think somebody's judging you, and you could end up being depressed based on a thought, not on an actuality. Yeah. So, yeah, thoughts are powerful, and we have to be very mindful and heart-centered and aware of how we're using those thoughts.
And how about regret? I struggle with regret. You know, wishing I did this or, you know, didn't do that, you know, and then that could just be like feeling like a lock, like there's a lock in.
Yeah, well, that's a pattern that can absolutely control your whole life. It's not something to stay in if you can help it. You know, is to let go of things, you know, because we don't know really. You know, you could make another choice or you could not make everything leads to a different path. And like you said, if you're open to what comes to you, then you allow yourself to make choices and let go. You know, don't hold on to it.
Right. Don't
if at all possible. Yeah,
be
because what it is then you keep thinking that. And then that keep thinking, oh, I should have done this, I should have done this, I should have done this, will erode your self-confidence.
Mm.
And so if you can say, wow, let me think about maybe I could have made some other choices. Let me remember this so when it comes around again, I can try a different option. You know, so to give yourself more space around things. And if you do something that created a consequence that you didn't like, then you can learn from it. You can say, well, okay, let me try to remember this so I can be wiser the next time around. But not to beat yourself up about it.
Right. And it's like all these, the regret usually is that I didn't have enough confidence to make the decision.
Yeah, and that regret is also feeding into your not having the confidence.
Right.
It's creating a lack of confidence.
A lack of confidence.
So it's like looping in. So at some point, you know, when you feel either regret or if you feel that you don't have confidence, give yourself a reminder, oh, wait a minute, this is part of the programming. Because these are little things we pick up as we grow, and they become like programs.
Mm.
And so if you can recognize that it's not real, that it's actually a program.
Oh, yeah.
And then you could say, I don't feel confident, but wait, it's a program. All right, so let me move away from that sense of not feeling confident because it's not real. And then you could start moving into, well, if that's not real, let me play with what it would feel like to be confident. And just start moving away from it gradually by recognizing that it's a program.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Good evening, and it's been great.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to Heart of Mind Radio. Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine Davis. And before getting too far in, I wanted to remind those of you who are interested that I will be am teaching actually an ongoing class on Saturdays. It is meditation and movement, and it's really a mind-body practice, mind-body-spirit practice. And it is at Studio Maya in Brooklyn, and that is on Bergen Street. So it's fairly centrally located in the downtown or so portion of Brooklyn on Bergen Street, Studio Maya, Saturdays at 2 o'clock. And it's an ongoing class. I call it Cosmic Qigong. But it's really a mind-body practice. It's a way of settling in and becoming connected to the pure part of our being. Anyone who might want more information, you could either send an email to heartofmindradio@gmail.com, or you could give me a call. The number is, let's see, do I remember my number? 347, let me check it to make sure I don't give out the wrong number. 347-480-1694, 347-480-1694. If you're interested in the mind-body practice, you can give me a call. And it's actually only going till the end of July on Saturdays at 2 p.m. And we also have a monthly spiritual support group. We meet in Brooklyn. It's the third Wednesday of the month. So we've already done the June meeting last week. Our next meeting will be July 20th, our spiritual support group meeting. So you can check all that out if you would like to get a little bit more involved in the work and mission of this program. I'm going to play another piece of music for you. It is called Absence of Fear, and it is by Jewel from her Spirit CD.
Inside my skin, there is this space. It twists and turns, it bleeds and aches. Inside my heart, there's an empty room. It's waiting for lightning, it's waiting for you. My bones.
Again, this is Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine. I was able to find the flyer for this class I'm offering on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m., and it will continue through July 30th. For those who would like to check it out, you can actually drop in. It's at Studio Maya, 603 Bergen Street in Brooklyn. And that is between Carlton and Vanderbilt Avenue. And you could take the 2 or 3 train to Bergen Street. If you want to get more information or ask a question, you could always give me a call. My phone number is 347-480-1694. You can also communicate by email, heartofmindradio@gmail.com. And this course is a Qigong course, which is a mind-body practice, and it helps to integrate the mind, body, and spirit. Qigong is a graceful interplay of breath, meditation, and movement designed to cultivate inner peace and activate your innate healing capacity. So it's a way of de-stressing, relaxing, and preparing yourself for the upcoming week. You're welcome to participate. There is a donation. If you want more information, you can email or give a call. And so we're going to be finishing up in the next moment or two. But I really want to stress that it is important to de-stress. To allow yourself the space to just be and to allow whatever feelings ripple through to make their way through. They rise up, they come through you, and they leave your field. Suppressing it has a tendency to keep it. But we also have to take a responsibility in terms of what we allow in our mind, in our life, in our energy field, so that we can be attentive to our thoughts, be attentive to our emotions, and in general, allow them to be signposts to take us deeper into questioning either ourselves or our understanding. Unfortunately, we don't have time for more calls. There was a call coming in. But perhaps we will be able to take more calls next week. I may have a guest next week. I'm expecting to be speaking with Marianne Williamson soon, maybe next week. You could also tune in. I have a program on Friday mornings over the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, on the internet. That is Gary Knowles radio station, internet radio station. And there is a version of Heart of Mind Radio there, Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium on PRN.FM, Friday mornings at 10 a.m. Listen on the internet or by phone, I believe. And I also co-host Health Action, which is heard on Mondays at 1 p.m. So I tend to be here spaced out throughout the week, so there's always an opportunity to connect. I do a lot of community work, the spiritual support group. Every month we come together and support and share and have conversation. And I'm looking to expand that in other ways as well, so that we can connect on the internet as well, or maybe phone conferencing. And I actually have a private practice in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, in which I do energy healing, spiritual counseling. So there's lots of ways to connect deeper than is possible on the radio. But I love being here with you, so I thank you for joining me and sharing this morning with me over Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. Again, I'm Catherine Davis. My email, heartofmindradio@gmail.com. And you can also reach by phone, 347-480-1694. I'm going to play a piece of music as we set up. And I want you to stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. So I think I'm going to play another little song, a little bit poignant but sweet, by India Arie, and it's called Beautiful. I wish you a good morning, and stay tuned. Thank you.
to a place where I can hold the intangible and let go of the pain with all my might. I want to go to a place where I'm suspended in ecstasy, somewhere between dark and light, where wrong becomes right. I wanna go to beautiful.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, imagination, and enchantment. My name is Jim Freund. With us this morning, Noah Beta Haran. I rehearse the last name, I screw up the first name. Wouldn't you know it? Stay tuned. Thank you.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. There is, by now, a definite formula to Pixar films. It's a formula not necessarily restricted to Pixar films, and it should not be a surprise to anybody, myself included, that there is a recognizable formula. Where Pixar has shown its strength, and this applies to most Pixar films, is that their skills as storytellers and animators manage to keep you engaged, even when you know the formula is in effect. Inside Out, Monsters, Inc., Wall-E, all adhere to that formula, but are works of genius. Yes, I said it, nevertheless. The best moment in Finding Dory is a formula moment. There's probably a more official name for it, but I'm calling it the all-is-lost moment. That moment when our protagonist is at the most dire point in his or her adventures, physically, strategically, and emotionally. In the case of Finding Dory, our heroine, Dory, the fish who suffers from short-term memory loss, whom we first met in Finding Nemo and who is voiced again by Ellen DeGeneres, has been swept away from her companions and finds herself completely isolated. She has no idea where she is. Dependent on her friends to keep her on mission, which in this case is to find her parents, she is tortured by a notion of a quest that is not yet completed, but whose full parameters remain frustratingly elusive to her. Confused and frightened, she searches her environment, seeking out anything that will trigger the slightest spark of a memory. Director Andrew Stanton, working with co-director Angus MacLean, drops his camera way back to frame Dory in a great expanse of sea and sucks practically all color out of the scene save for Dory's distinctive blue and yellow markings. It's a quiet yet powerful moment that capitalizes on great production design, camera work, and character animation combined with an affecting voice performance by DeGeneres. Formula maybe, but fantastic formula nevertheless. If only the rest of the film was as exquisitely orchestrated. As strong as the formula works for Finding Dory in that one sequence, it fails the film elsewhere. You get the sense that director Stanton is trying to reach the same emotional beats that he explored far more effectively in Finding Nemo, but they feel more token than genuinely felt. Instead of a dentist's aquarium, here Dory and companions find themselves struggling through a SeaWorld-like marine institute. And while Stanton admirably tells a story that doesn't have any overt bad guys, one wonders if Disney, mindful that their theme park arm has a few nature-based attractions of its own, told Stanton, "Go a little easy on the Free Willy aspect, okay?" The logistics of the adventure feel strained. Turns out fish can actually speak and read English. Big surprise. And a pairing between Dory and a monomaniacal octopus, or septopus since he's lost one tentacle, voiced by Ed O'Neill, doesn't quite click in the way other bristly Pixar friendships do. Not the least, the relationship between Dory and Albert Brooks's neurotic clownfish Marlin in the original Finding Nemo. Not surprisingly, there's lots of beautiful stuff in Finding Dory, including a sweeping shot of the interior of one of the park's attractions with an amazing, gigantic cylindrical aquarium. But this is another Pixar sequel that never manages to justify its existence. From the director who took significant narrative and thematic risks with Wall-E, and whose original Finding Nemo was all about the need to take risks, Finding Dory is, sadly, a conventional Pixar sequel. So, instead, let me perk you up with some good news, if a little off-topic. This Sunday night, / Monday morning, June 26th, / 27th, at midnight, you can catch the official launch of the Monster Channel. 24/7 scary movies, TV shows, music videos, all that stuff delivered direct to your home screens. I'm involved. If you tune in at midnight on Sunday, the launch will kick off with something I created for the station and I'm very proud of, and I'm participating behind the scenes on the retro movie show Throwback Thursdays featuring Fangoria editor emeritus Tony Timponi, and my CFQ TV movie news updates will be running throughout the programming schedule. I don't know when, you'll just have to look for them. You can watch by going to monsterchannel.tv on your PC or iOS device, or by signing up to the Monster Channel app on your Roku device. You can't get it on Android devices yet. Sorry, I hope they're working on that. But no subscription fee. It's all free, as God intended TV networks to be, and all scary, or at least morbidly amusing. We go there too. I'm very excited this is happening. Been a long time coming, and it's going to be fun. The Monster Channel at monsterchannel.tv or on your Roku device. Come scream with us. I'm Dan Persons. Now is the time to take a stand against hatred, fear, and greed. Register to vote, and let's defeat Trump.
Well, I was hoping to have the song by the Bonzo Doodog Dog Band, and I know that Dan would have appreciated it, playing their song, Look Out, There's a Monster Coming, which would have been so appropriate. So, Dan, you're going to have to promote your self-indulgent little Roku channel. And, you know, I'll forgive you for the fact that it's on iOS and not Android for the moment. But I have a Roku, so that will have to do. And you have to do that next week, before I get preempted by more pitching again, except they may preempt the preemptions because they just figured out that they'd be fundraising during the national election campaigns or caucuses or blood battles or whatever they're called. And, you know, how could we have any programming 24/7 that, you know, that isn't, you know, about what every other radio station is doing at the moment, which is why you're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial, alternative radio in New York City, WBAI, at 99.5 FM and over WBAI.org. You see, okay, there goes, like, I'm telling Noah, my guest this morning, that I've spent time as a professional announcer. And after 40-plus years of doing this, I guess the only thing one can say to that is, well, that wasn't enough now, was it? So say good morning, Noah.
Good morning.
Yeah, do that a few times. Talk to me a little bit. I have to figure out what mic is.
Good morning. Good morning.